Blog Talk Radio.
Sheriffs in other states also have refused to enforce gun laws, but they are in the minority, according to the New York Times. No, no statistics exist.
Hmm.
The resistance of sheriffs in Colorado, caused by two state senators who supported the legislation to be recalled in elections in September. Another senator who resigned last month rather than face a recall. Eric, yeah, you know, Colorado people like their guns, damn it. And Eric Brown, a spokesman for Governor John W. Hinkenlooper, of Colorado. However, have you ever heard about a name called Hinkenlooper?
Looper? No.
Anyway.
Hinkenlooper.
That guy must be a stoner.
Jeez.
Has backed the gun laws, saying, particularly on background checks, the numbers show the law is working. Brown said the Colorado Bureau of Investigation has run nearly 3,500 checks on private sales since the law went into effect. The Bureau also has denied gun sales to 70 people. Well, last month, the federal district court judge ruled against the claim in that the sheriff's lawsuit that the gun laws were unconstitutionally vague. The judge also said that while the sheriffs could sue as individuals, they had no standing to sue in their official capacity. But the state law, a top law enforcement official, said sheriffs had wide discretion in enforcing state laws. Lance Clem, a spokesman for the Colorado Department of Public Safety, said, "We're not in a position of telling sheriffs and chiefs what to do or not to do."
Well,
good for them,
one would hope not.
But anyway, I'm proud of that. I'm very proud to know that they are standing up for our rights and their rights. Huh. Oh, God. This was a real sad thing. I mean, you know, right around Christmas time, it makes you sick.
What happened?
Well, it turns out that thousands of homeless...
Isn't that horrible?
Yeah.
I read that.
Isn't that sick?
Oh, terrible.
Thousands of homeless people are in...
right in the Silicon Valley.
Yeah, right in the Silicon Valley. The jungle. Thousands of homeless people live in shanty towns at the epic center of high-tech, super-rich Silicon Valley. Residents of Silicon Valley, the largest homeless encampment, illustrate the widening divide between the nation's haves and have-nots. On December 15, 2013, Guy wrote, by mid-morning on Thursday, the sun was shining hard enough to dry wet blankets, and the residents of the jungle began surfacing, letting each other know they were still alive. Still straight nights, six straight nights of freezing temperatures had tested their tenacity, not to mention their tarps and tents. It was so cold that the raccoons that raided the trash bins every night disappeared. At first, ditto the crows, squirrels, and feral cats. Life in the jungle, 75 wooded areas of Interstate 101 in San Jose that comprise the Silicon Valley's largest homeless encampment, came to a standstill. With the hard ground thawing, the jungle looked as if spring had sprung, and people strolled the dirt paths, rode their bikes, and walked their dogs. Everyone in the jungle, 200 men and women, give or take, looked ready to celebrate surviving the earliest, coldest cold snap on record. "We were lucky," said Troy Feed, a former carpenter, squinting into the bright sky. "Not everyone was." He said, suffers from depression. Roy Freed, the former carpenter, suffers from depression, has lived in the jungle on and off for 6 years. He ended up homeless after he lost his job when he went to jail for nearly a year for owning a motorcycle he didn't know was stolen. Now he lives in an elaborate encampment he built out of a scrounged wood and plastic that is cat, with his cat Navy.
Huh. Anyway, years, huh?
Yeah. For homeless men in Silicon Valley, four homeless men did not make it through the season's first bout of sub-freezing temperatures. Over the last 2 weeks, three of them froze to death on the streets of San Jose, not far from the jungle. Oh, my God. That people live and die on the streets of Silicon Valley is no news to the poor, of course. With more than 6,500 tech companies in all, Santa Clara County is home to the biggest stars in the tech universe, including Google, Facebook, Yahoo, eBay, and Apple. But the land of high-tech milk and honey is also a prime example of the widening divide between the nation's haves and the have-nots. For all its stock option millionaires, the San Jose, Santa Clara County region, population 1.8 million, also has the nation's fifth largest population of homeless after New York, Los Angeles, Seattle, and San Diego. According to the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, the main culprits, budget cuts that have frayed the safety net and sky-high housing costs. These days, a three-bedroom, one-bath starter home in San Francisco, in San Jose, the county seat in one of the most affordable cities, costs a cool million. Can you imagine that?
No.
Yeah, a three-bedroom, one-bath starter home costs $1 million in San Jose. Rents for a two-bedroom apartment go for $2,000 to $5,000 a month, and those on the low end are scarce. While homelessness remains off the radar of the Silicon Valley titans, it keeps getting worse. Up to 20% in 2 years, more than 7,600 people sleep on the streets every night. Dozens of encampments dot the landscape, and thousands of people live in temporary quarters, shelters, motels, friends, homes. Several private and public organizations in Santa Clara County are dedicated to helping the unhoused receive medical care, supplies, and assistance in finding shelter. But funds and available units to move homeless people into permanent housing are meager. For now, emergency shelters remain the only immediate option for those on the streets. But shelters prohibit pets and loads of possessions, and most people in the jungle have both. Photo, the jungle is a place of many signs, as a sign that says. Signs mark people's territories and give instructions as to where to put trash for pickup. The city picks up trash placed in trash bags it provides jungle residents. It says, welcome visitors, or more often, warn them away. The one sign says, please beware of dogs, will bite. And it says, in fact, calling the jungle an encampment hardly describes it. A shanty town of tents and shacks made from doors, tarps, and even wherever else people could find. The jungle sits on county land along Coyote Creek, just below the street level from Story Road, a commercial hub anchored by a Walmart. Yeah. It's pretty sad, eh?
Pretty sad.
Pretty damn sad.
I can't get into this thing.
That's okay, we'll survive this one unless they zap us. A few camps are visible from the street with bright blue tarps peeking through trees. But for the most part, the jungle is a hidden world, a village of Silicon Valley homeless or untouchables, complete with good neighborhoods and bad ones. Driven to homelessness by job losses, addictions, afflictions, bankruptcies, or a combination of catastrophes, most of the jungle's residents are mired at the bottom of the economic heap. Some do work full-time, but say they simply can't afford to pay rent. They range in age from late teens to their 70s, and most between 40 and 50 years old. Almost everyone is from San Jose or nearby towns, and those who've been homeless for years have no income, no prospects, and nothing left to lose except their campsite.
Jeez. For many people here, the only thing worse than living in the jungle would be not to live here. That is, if the county wrecking crews come calling, as happens once or twice a year, encampments are dismantled and the residents get shooed away, but they start coming back within hours. Where else would we go, said Mama Red, a 60-year-old resident who commands the respect of a tribal elder. Most residents go by nicknames or first names only. Mama Red, who has four dogs, three cats, and a multi-room encampment, she always seems to be sleeping, has lived in the jungle for 7 years. She owned a business once, a floral shop near Santa Cruz, lost it, then became a caregiver to a friend's mother. When the person died, Mama Red spiraled into homelessness, but she has made the best of the jungle. Her property is landscaped with plastic pansies and protected by a tall fence constructed of green tarps and tree branches. Oh, boy.
And when
When the county comes, they seize property and store it for 90 days, but no one in the jungle ever claims it. People say they don't have the means to get possessions they had accumulated little by little, usually on foot or carrying on their bikes. So they begin the process of scavenging again, everything from bedding to framed prints. People literally mark their territory, scrawling the names on their tents, putting up a warning signs to would-be trespassers. Anna Davis, a 46-year-old San Jose native, has become an expert at creating a living space in the jungle. Having lost everything, she had to dump trucks at least four times. Having lost everything, she had to dump trucks at least four times in 3 years. I found all of what I have, she said proudly, showing off her camp. It is lovingly designed but made of different woods, hard by Coyote Creek. Davis has woven fallen tree branches into a board of fence, added stepping stones for a walkway, and cushioned her mattress with stuffed animals and pillows, all things she has found. Oh, boy. When she said she was an administrative assistant for a tech company, but she lost her job to the voices in her head. I'm a schizophrenic, she said. I realize now I've been hearing voices since I was 4 years old. A lot of people here have the same thing I have in one way or another. Davis lives in a neighborhood where those who use drugs tend to gather. So does Yolanda Gutierrez, who is 39 years old, a San Jose native. Gutierrez, a mother of three young adults, said she ended up in the jungle because of her bad choices, namely a boyfriend who introduced her to methamphetamine. Her children now live in Mexico with their parents while Gutierrez recovers from a stroke she suffered 2 weeks ago. Oh, my God.
Yeah, I'll tell you. Some people are just, that's all the hell that people live. It's coming up here.
I rode my bike to the hospital, she said. The doctors told me I was very lucky. Lucky is a word residents of the jungle seem to use a lot. Jose, a 46-year-old handyman, had asked for his last name not to be used because it might embarrass his family. He said he considered himself lucky for the encampment he shares with his 90-pound pit bull puppy, Rocky, and a bunch of chickens that tend to wander through the jungle. Always poor, he said, he chose to move to the jungle after quarreling with a roommate. Like so many others here, he has designed a space that feels more permanent than not. A cactus garden adorns the front of his camp, and he has created different rooms out of found objects. Even Rocky has his own house with his own twin-size mattress. He eats better than I do, Jose said, adding kibble to Rocky's bowl. Residents of the jungle have no shortage of food. Church groups from all over San Jose come on Sundays. A month ago, a handful of co-workers from a local LED light company began showing up on Tuesdays with food and supplies. Last Tuesdays, they bought a U-Haul truck full of sleeping bags. They brought after collecting donations from friends and others who heard about their trek to the jungle. Individuals show up to give out food and blankets as well.
The jungle has its own volunteers who collect donations, mostly food, from local businesses and dole them out. City and county officials say the jungle has had its share of crime, including a murder last year. Fights break out, but the jungle has peacekeepers too. Self-appointed mediators who broker truces or, if deemed necessary, ask troublemakers to leave. Most people are okay, said Troy Fry, who regularly allows his neighbors to use a camp shower he has hooked up in an elaborate camp he shares with his cat, his baby. Freed also suffers from depression, manages a smile when he gives a tour of his home, a warren of tidy rooms. And I've got plans for this place, he said. I just hope we last the winter here. Winter remains weeks away, but for a little while, the weather will be kind enough. It's really very sad. I mean, everyone needs is a freelance writer in San Francisco.
I wonder how those people keep warm.
I have no idea. They must be burning something. But it's really pretty sad. That's California. It's pretty cold.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, God. Well, anyway, as weak may making you wait for babies.
The gluten infertility leak.
Yeah, yeah, pretty much. Really, really interesting. Turns out, I guess, that gluten, now I know gluten is a horrible, horrible thing, but it does for me anyway. But I guess it does a lot for a lot of other people, especially expecting mothers.
There are a few
anxiety
triggers as provocative as the primal desire to conceive. To experience that drive and to be thwarted by seemingly uncontrollable, unidentifiable factors is maddening. Many patients end up in my office because they feel the need, they need help managing these feelings. Instead of medicating their anxiety, I help them to learn to relax and mindfulness in the midst of stress, and then I help them get pregnant. How? I have many tools in my kit, but the most powerful one is a grain, sugar, and dairy-free diet. In traditional cultures, the preconception couple is offered prime access to nutrient-dense foods such as egg yolks, fish eggs, and organ meats, high in fat-soluble vitamins, D vitamins, and choline. Perhaps they appreciated the recently discovered importance of nutrients on both the egg and the sperm. A woman's body needs to sense that it is an optimal time to conceive, and the low-fat, high-carb diet is a sure way to hang up the closed-for-business sign. Babies, after all, are made of fat and protein like adults with very little starch to speak of. Lauren Cordain, in his seminal paper entitled Cereal Grains, Humanity's Double-Edged Sword, posts compelling evidence that our genome may not yet have fully adapted successfully over the past 10,000 years to meet the challenges of grain consumption. These challenges include inbuilt defense mechanisms of these grasses.
So-called anti-nutrients and invisible thorns called lectins.
That protect them against us, ensuring their survival, including the promotion of local inflammation in the gut, mineral binding, digestive impairments, and changes to the to gut permeability, recently elucidated by Dr. Alessio Fasano. There is a growing body of evidence to support the efficacy of an approach which controls for glycemic instability associated polycystic ovarian syndrome, a major cause of infertility. But it is worth focusing on one particular baby-unfriendly food, gluten. Gluten is found in wheat and is a member of the prolamine class of proteins. Prolamines are predominantly found in the seeds of cereal grasses, that is, grains, such as barley, oats, rye, rice, corn. Wheat gluten contains an alcohol-soluble class of proteins known as alpha-gladins, whose protein triggers autoimmune, celiac disease in approximately 1% of the population, and are now understood to trigger inflammatory changes in even non-celiac immune response even non-celiac immune response in a fraction of the population that may include up to 80%. So even if you're not celiac sensitive,
up to 87.5 of those with celiac disease do not have any gastrointestinal symptoms, leading to a silent pathology that often causes decades a malaise before diagnosis. Celiac disease has been associated with non-gut pathology like diabetes, osteoporosis, thyroid dysfunction, and malignancy. And if discussed, the
relationship.
Yeah, in up to 17% of these patients, between gluten and brain-based symptoms, here for a condemning list of all the body pollutant effects, a review of Shah and Leffert.
The spectrum of systemic manifestations associated with CD, that's celiac disease, is broad and encompasses iron deficiency anemia, hyposplenism, reduction in BMD, liver function abnormalities, neuropathy, psychological disturbances, fatigue, malaise, arthralgias, asthma, weight loss, bloating, abdominal pain, bowel changes, alopecia, headaches, menstrual irregularities, infertility, and adverse pregnancy outcomes. Also, for a list of over 200 adverse health effects linked to gluten across both celiac and non-celiac populations, you can view the biomedical abstracts from the Green Med Info database, Wheat Health Effects. Does gluten cause infertility? According to a recent prospective analysis, the answer may be that in a subset of women with unexplained infertility, 15% of the 7.4% to 14% of women struggling with infertility are unexplained. Gluten exposure may be the primary contributor to a distressing and expensive chapter in their lives. Only the second to be done in the U.S., this study looks at 188 infertility patients and found that 5.9% of these with unexplained infertility turned out to have celiac disease as diagnosed by antibodies and biopsy. All these patients were Caucasian. They all went on to conceive within a year of dietary change. Isn't that interesting? Yes. A number of European studies reviewed here have demonstrated that women with infertility, even those who have failed multiple rounds of IVF, once identified to have antibodies to gladden and or tissue transglutaminase blood tests used in the diagnosis of celiac disease, can go on to conceive once they adopt a gluten-free diet. On average, previous data suggests that 2.6 to 8% of those struggling with infertility have undiagnosed celiac disease. Sticking to dietary recommendation results in decreased secondary amenorrhea, delays in period onset, early menopause, and miscarriage, according to a study that analyzed the health of celiac patients who adhered to a gluten-free diet who didn't. According to data that suggests a 2.25-fold increased risk of miscarriage, intrauterine growth restriction, low birth weight, and preterm birth, this dietary change may also protect the pregnancy once it does occur. To take related concerns one step further, according to a notable association between adult schizophrenia and gluten antibodies in the pregnant mom, we may be positively guiding the future brain health of our offspring by shunning these grains. Wow.
Amazing, huh? Yeah. There's another page to this, too. But, well, let's see.
It was scary.
Yeah. See, I knew this stuff was terrible, bad. It's bad for me. I knew it was bad for a lot of people. How it messes with you. Notably, the majority of women diagnosed with celiac disease and other represented in these studies had no gastrointestinal complaints. That is because we now have a growing understanding of how much more far-reaching gluten's effects are than just the intestines. The effects of wheat on the body and proposed ways that it interferes with a healthy conception and pregnancy include nutrient depletion, zinc, selenium, iron, and vitamin D and calcium deficiency can result from associated changes to the small intestinal lining following exposure to gluten. The 2007 study published in Gut indicates can occur in those with and without celiac disease. Everyone, these nutrients are vital to proper hormonal signaling, including LH and FSH production.
Those are the ovulation managers.
Yeah.
DNA production and oxygenation. Notably, thyroid dysfunction and its association with celiac disease may be driven in part by a selenium deficiency, and thyroid balance is critical for conception, miscarriage, preterm birth prevention.
Autoimmunity.
Gluten typically activates the adaptive immune system by linking to tissue and organs containing an enzyme called transglutaminase, like the gut lining, skin, and nervous system, stimulating an immune response. It's kind of complicated
this
here.
This concept of molecular mimicry also accounts for antibodies. Thank you. To thyroid, synapsin, and so on.
Yes,
it keeps on going and going and going with words I don't know. And then placental tissue, transglutamines, may be specifically targeted with altered recognition of the fetus by the maternal immune system. There is also evidence that wheat leptin was direct, non-immune, and genetic susceptibility medicated adverse effects and due to its ability to travel freely through the body, including the blood-brain barrier and placental barrier. It may do direct harm to developing fetuses. So this stuff is unbelievable. Inflammation directly related to triggering the immune system. There is more than the data shows. My God, taking home your baby.
So one of the reasons I love working with infertility patients is because they are uniquely motivated to improve their health and wellness. My recommendation is to eliminate gluten at a bare minimum and try to do it for 3 to 6 months. Find an enlightened practitioner who can help you with these changes and recommend other fertility promoting interventions. Data will continue to emerge around this connection, but if you've been in the infertility mill or if you're just looking to promote a healthy pregnancy, don't wait, just do it.
So stay away from bread, folks. Stay away from gluten. Stay away from anything with gluten in it. It'll kill you. Oh, man, I know. If you're suffering from psoriasis or skin rashes or suffering from anything like that.
Heartburn.
Excessive heartburn. It's gluten, folks. It's a gluten. It's bread. It's all bread. Or, if you're drinking beer will do it. Beer will kill you. That's full of gluten. That's full of wheat. Well, let's get a little political here. News coverage. The Republican gift of taking away unemployment insurance benefits right at Christmas time. Isn't that wonderful?
Yeah, it makes you feel good, doesn't it?
And some of the bitches, they should really hope not. And hopefully this will come up.
Well, they go home for Christmas.
Unemployment benefits run out in December.
Here comes some big money worry for millions of Americans. On December 28th, 1.3 million Americans will lose their unemployment insurance. There's no plan to extend unemployment insurance for people who have been out of work for more than 6 months.
Benefits in 3 days after Christmas for some Americans.
As you know, 3 days after Christmas, over 1 million Americans are going to lose their unemployment support that they get right now. The reality is in the House of Representatives, the Speaker, the Republicans don't want to extend unemployment insurance.
What they did with regard to unemployment insurance and extending benefits, that is unconscionable.
If you're going to lose 300,000 jobs,
in 3 days after Christmas, some Americans.
As you know, 3 days after Christmas, over 1 million Americans are going to lose their unemployment support that they get right now. The reality is in the House of Representatives, the Speaker and the Republicans don't want to extend unemployment insurance.
What they did with regard to unemployment insurance and extending benefits, that is unconscionable.
If you're going to lose 300,000 jobs in the economy due to the lack of extending the unemployment insurance issue, that's a dumb move.
Understand insurance, that means you pay in when you're working, and you collect on the unemployment insurance if you're out of work.
Senator Sherrod Brown says 128,000 Ohioans will lose their unemployment payments at the end of the year.
100,000 Wisconsinites come January.
17,000 Nevadans will be cut off now, December 28th.
For New Yorkers, that means unemployment checks will stop after 26 weeks instead of the current 63 weeks.
What happens to people who can't get unemployment insurance and cannot get it extended?
The children of those people end up being much less successful in school, having less chance to complete college.
Call us back, Mr. Boehner. Let us vote to provide for unemployment insurance for working men and women.
Gentlewoman's time has expired.
Faces across America will not have a tear of desperation.
Gentlewoman's time has expired.
The deal is good.
The gentlewoman's time has expired.
We cannot allow this to happen in this season of joy.
The gentlewoman will suspend.
don't give a damn, do they?
Yeah, they don't give a damn. That's pretty sick. I mean, especially you get the guy who's running the gavel there, the Republican.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's just a sick, sick situation. Here we go. This was sent by a friend of ours, Joe Bloomer. This one. 1/3 of the world's water supply is polluted.
Oh, I had read that.
Pretty sick, huh?
Yeah. By Fukushima, that's helped. They're pouring all the radiated water into the...
Isn't that amazing?
Well, they don't know what to do with it, so they just pour it in the ocean.
That's what they're going to do with it. Fukushima radiation is not only out of control, it is putting in danger of life as we know it. Putting in danger.
It is putting in danger life as we know it.
Oh, okay. 300 tons of radioactive groundwater is leaking into the Pacific Ocean every day. And nuclear experts say Japan's disaster is intensifying and there shall be no happy ending. All sea life will eventually die. So will we. All right, so the scoop is that TEPCO is dumping radioactive water into the Pacific at the same time that a key company official has admitted that the problem is not under control. Furthermore, the becquerel per kg allowed amount in Japan is 100 kilograms or something, I don't know, with compared to 10 times more in America and 1,000 becquerels, okay? The cover-up fully extends to the hospitals in Japan where there are cases of open rashes on people's faces and burns, yet health staff are warned by superiors to cover that up. Now the becquerel count is thousands of times above the Japanese legal limit. Holy shit. Wake up, Japan. Wake up, America. Never mind dead fish. How about radioactive rain right here in North America?
Uh-huh.
Wake up, people. Yeah, well, add that to the now radioactive snow. The Pacific Ocean is 1/3 of the world's seas, and its water and everything is dying. The basis of the entire food chain, krill, plankton, is poisoned with radiation, and 1/3 of the world's water is poisoned with the radiation as well. Even the snow. There is nothing that anyone can do except pray, hope, and be aware that these are apocalyptic days we are living in. One sad, sad thing, guys. I mean, that's what's happening, folks. So, I don't know what to tell you. We're in bad freaking shit. I love this one. You see this? I love it. I had to post it too. It was so funny. Obama says, "How about you turn in your guns?" And the grouchy cat says, "How about you suck my furry balls?"
Oh, is that the grouchy cat?
That's the grouchy cat. Says, "How about you suck my furry balls?" I love that. There you go, Obama. Up your butt. Oh, man. You know, life goes on, man. It just gets sicker and sicker all the time. But,
well, Obama has to go on vacation now to Hawaii.
Yeah. To his $40 million place that he built, bought. He's about $40 million.
Mm-hmm. That's his payoff.
What a piece of crap dirt shit he is. Anyway. Usually gets Freak Katy Couric out. Wow, that's a good job. Keeping her cool.
Huh.
That's interesting.
I wonder what kind of weird guest she has.
Want to go?
Yeah, just for fun.
Why not? We're having fun on this show. Katy Couric, Jeff Carlwin brings the jungle to Katie. So maybe she gets kissed by a weird animal. Oh, she gets kissed by an alligator.
Pick up the paper, pick up the bag, clean up the bows and the ribbon and bags.
I hate anything on Yahoo because you gotta go through this crap. Sorry, folks. I thought it'd be funny to see this.
Mm.
But it's not. She has to. Katy Couric kisses an alligator.
Yeah.
Ooh, how exciting. Alligator, you have to be there.
You have to see it.
I'm not. I, I, No, I'm not. This is an alligator.
Isn't that awesome? You can touch him.
Tell me about, oh, Lord.
This is Fred, and Fred is an alligator with a group called Rainforest Reptiles, and he was rescued in a pond in Massachusetts. He was an illegal pet. Someone released him into the pond. But this is one of the most ancient, most powerful predators on our planet. Alligators have been on our planet for 60 million years. And this is also one of our country's greatest conservation success stories because alligators were pushed to the brink of extinction, nearly disappeared in the 1970s. And today we have millions and millions of alligators. But there's just so many amazing things about them.
Okay.
Well,
you're really good.
Not particularly. Huge animal, though. I wouldn't want to have it be on the mouth end of that thing.
No, we had a friend once who had an alligator and a boa.
Yeah.
Did I'm considering a career in organized crime, government, or private sector in school. All right. So, let's go to this. I ain't going back to my statue. I just got cut out.
It's too bad. I can't help you at all because...
Yeah, isn't that strange?
That's, I can't even get on the site.
That's weird.
Uh-huh. Can't get to his headline.
Yeah, well, anyway, we were talking about this polluted water.
Mm-hmm.
But it turns out that TEPCO plans to dump all the Fukushima radiation into the ocean.
I did read that. Isn't that horrible?
Unbelievable.
Well, they don't know what else to do with it,
yeah,
so they're going to dump it in the water.
Yeah, but, I mean, but can't they just blow up their own country and save the world? TEPCO is planning on dumping all of the radioactive water stored at Fukushima into the ocean. The industry-controlled nuclear regulators are pushing for dumping the radiation as well. God damn, idiots. Juan Carlos Lennington, head of emissions to Fukushima, Daiichi, December 4th, controlled discharge is a regular practice in all nuclear facilities in the world. And what we are trying to say here is to consider this one of the options to contribute to a good balance of risks and stabilizing the facility for the long term. Yeah, right. The thing is gone, pal.
A lot of jargon. They don't know what to do.
No, no. And the general said that TEPCO should weigh the possible damaging effects of discharging water against total risks involved in overall decommissioning work progress. This is a bullshit article.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's like, you know, God, guys, I mean, just kill yourselves.
It's a horrible thing.
Kill yourself.
And they don't really say anything about it on the mainstream news. They don't
they don't
it.
Talk
you think
about
it never happened.
They don't talk about it because they know it's the end of the world, for crying out loud. I mean, you know, they start talking about that, everybody in the world will be on, governments will be crumbling there. I mean, you think Obama's got problems now. Oh, yeah. Well, anyway... Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation invested millions in private prisons. What do you know about that?
Yeah.
Wonderful fucking Gates. The Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation says on its website that it works to help all people lead healthy, productive lives. While the Gates Foundation has invested in many worthy projects to help people worldwide, some of the Gates Foundation trust investments seem to contradict its admirable goal. Lana Jones recently analyzed the Gates Foundation's 2012 tax returns to see where it was investing its money. Well, probably the most surprising investment was $2.2 million in private prison company.
Uh-huh.
The GEO Group, which has been accused of numerous human rights abuses and violations. According to Palm Beach Post, the GEO Group has a laundry list of incidents in its private prisons. The state of Texas even canceled an $8 million contract with the GEO Group because of a juvenile jail where officials found feces on walls and floors, locked emergency exits, and excessive use of pepper spray on minors. The GEO groups knowingly put workers at risk of injury or death by failing to implement well-recognized measures that would protect employees from physical assault by inmates. Mother Jones also found that the Gates Foundation invested $2.4 million in G4S, a UK-based company that operates private prisons for juveniles. G4S has had its own scandals over the death and abuse of children. I mean, why would this son of a bitch be investing in prisons like this? You know? Mother Jones also found that Gates, the defense contractor, DynCorp, received $2.5 million from Gates Foundation, even though DynCorp had a long history of scandals. In 2010, DynCorp employees hired Afghan boys to dress up like girls and dance, and possibly provide sexual services, noted the Guardian.
Oh, God.
In 1999, DynCorp was involved in a sex scandal in Bosnia, where DynCorp employees were accused of raping and buying girls as young as 12 years old, noted the Huffington Post.
Nice company.
And Bill Gates is investing in these companies. Why is he doing this? What is he, a sick son of a bee?
I guess so.
He's a sick man. The guy's just sick. You know? He's really sick. Anyway. Man. This sick people. Cairo hit for the first snowfall in more than 100 years.
Yeah, like 3 feet of snow. Snow-coated dome. Oh, look at those pictures. I wish you could see these pictures. Snow-coated domes and minarets Friday. Whoops. As a record Middle East storm. Whoops. Got all kinds of stuff here.
Yeah, it's popping up
everywhere. As a record Middle East storm compounded the suffering of Syrian refugees, sent the Israeli army scrambling to dig out stranded motorists, and gave Egyptians a rare glimpse of snow in their capital. Nearly 3 feet of snow closed roads in and out of Jerusalem, which is set in high hills, and thousands in and around the city were left without power. Israeli soldiers and police rescued hundreds trapped in their cars by snow and ice. In the West Bank, the branches of olive trees groaned under the weight of snow. In Cairo, where a local news report said the last recorded snowfall was more than 100 years ago, children in outlying districts scampered in white-covered streets, and adults marveled at the sight, tweeting pictures of snow-dusted parks and squares. In other parts of the city, rain and hail rocketed down. On social media, some joked that the snowfall was the mystical work of General Abdel Fattah Sisi, the military strongman who is the focus of something of a cult personality among his followers. Sisi led the coup 5 months ago against the highly unpopular but democratically elected Islamic president, Mohamed Morsi. Snow-driven waves lashed Egyptian's Mediterranean coast, and fishermen in the ancient port city of Alexandria were warned by authorities against putting out to sea. In the Sinai Peninsula, snow fell on Mount Sinai and St. Catherine's Monastery at its foot. Amazing. I mean, that's really odd.
Anyway,
and they didn't just get a little, they got a lot.
This is a very sad article, but when I thought it was interesting, the fate of the world as we go.
Pennsylvania school tries to kick out two students after their families become homeless. Oh, that's so sad.
Isn't that sad?
As if their lives haven't been thrown into enough turmoil when their house was foreclosed on and the family became homeless. Two Pennsylvania students learned last Monday that they were no longer welcome at the school they had intended their entire lives because the campground they were living in was located just outside of town. The two students, one 8th grader and one 12th grader, whose names are withheld because they are minors, have lived in a camper with their parents in eastern Pennsylvania since losing their home to foreclosure in 2011. The campground where they were able to find refuge is located just outside the school district's boundaries. That shouldn't be a problem under federal law, which allows homeless students, that's true, to remain enrolled in the school they attend, even if extenuating circumstances force them to live outside the limits. Indeed, for more than 2 years, the two students were allowed to continue their education at the Eastern Area School District, giving them stability in an otherwise tumultuous situation. However, according to Law Center of Pennsylvania, an education nonprofit that filed a lawsuit on behalf of the students, They were kicked out of school without explanation last week. Easton School Solicitor John Freund wrote an email to the Express Times that they had made a study determination that this family living outside the boundaries of the district no longer qualified as homeless for the purpose of a free public education in Easton. The matter went to the U.S. District Court for the Eastern District of Pennsylvania, which issued a preliminary ruling on Thursday to immediately re-enroll the students pending the outcome of the suit. So Easton doesn't believe the students are homeless enough to qualify under federal law. It's important to note that most homeless people don't sleep on the streets, per se. Few would consider the 24-foot by 7-foot camper where the four-person family resides to be a permanent housing situation, but that's precisely what the school district is arguing.
Because of the court's ruling, the students will be able to continue attending classes at Easton for now, but their enrollment status remains in limbo. Unfortunately, their experience is not atypical. Overall, the number of homeless students in the United States hit a record high during the 2011-2012 school year, and more than 1.1 million homeless students, 1.1 million homeless students got enrolled in pre-K or to 12. Are a 10% increase from the previous year. That's horrible. In an effort to address the systemic challenges facing these students, a trio of senators introduced a bill last month to help homeless and foster youth overcome barriers that prevent many from going on to college. That's unbelievable, man.
Pretty sad, huh?
Sick thing. So damn sick. I thought this was interesting. Vitamin D is more effective than the flu shot.
I believe that.
You believe it?
Yeah.
I believe anything is more effective than a flu shot.
I would too.
Even no flu shot, period. But, anyway, that's still good to say. This is Green Med TV. Vitamin D is more effective than a flu shot. God, do I hate pop-ups. I hate them passion. Okay. And so the risk of children suffering from flu can be reduced by 50% if they take vitamin D. Doctors in Japan have found that implications for flu epidemics since vitamin D, which is naturally produced by the human body, are exposed to direct sunlight, has no significant side effects, cost little, and can be several times more effective than antiviral drugs or vaccines, according to research by the American Journal for Clinical
Let's play the video.
Thank you. Very good.
Hi, this is Dr. Mayor Eisenstein. Dr. John Cannell got it right. Dr. Mitsuyoshi Urashima got it right. And Dr. Damian Downey got it right. As long as so many of the hundreds of doctors at the American Academy of Anti-Aging Medicine. What did they get right? They showed that vitamin D proven more effective than both antivirals and vaccines in preventing the flu. Dr. Mitsuyoshi Urashima, writing in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition, found, I'm going to quote here from you, the antiviral drugs Zanamivir, Oseltamivir, reduce risk of flu by 8% in children who have been exposed to infection, compared to 50% or greater reduction with vitamin D. Wow. This makes absolutely incredible sense. Forget about the flu shot. Vitamin D, and more vitamin D, a proven and effective method for reducing the flu. And as I've said over and over again, it's not too late to not get the flu shot.
I like that.
Oh, man. That's what more people would listen to that stuff.
Yeah.
But, anyway. Let's see. We got...
we have about 9 minutes.
Yeah. Sugar and your brain. Alzheimer's disease actually type 3 diabetes.
How about that?
Yeah. The site is great. Go to GreenMed Info. It's a really good site.
I had heard there was a link between diabetes and Alzheimer's.
Yeah.
It starves your brain, tangles and twists vital cells, and for decades it has been misrepresented as an untreatable, genetically determined disease. Alzheimer's disease is the sixth leading cause of death in North America. The truth, however, is that this devastating illness shares a strong link with another sickness that wreaks havoc on millions of individuals in North America, and that's diabetes. We all know that individuals affected by type 1 and type 2 diabetes have a notable resistance to insulin. Type 1 is caused by the body's inability to produce insulin, and type 2 is caused by the deterioration of the body's insulin receptors associated with the consumption of too much refined carbohydrate like processed grains and sugars.
But when studies began to appear in 2005 that revealed a shocking correlation between insulin and brain cell deterioration, major breaks were made around Alzheimer's prevention. Health practitioners became curious about a critical question. Could Alzheimer's disease simply be type 3 diabetes? Alzheimer's disease has long been perceived as mysterious and inevitable. 5.3 million individuals suffer every year from the disease that appears to be untreatable. But if this illness is associated with insulin resistance, this simply isn't the case. We already know that diabetics are at least twice as likely to experience dementia. Oh, that's good to know. And the cells of your brain can become insulin resistant just like other cells in the body. What was once considered a mysterious accumulation of beta amyloid plaques, of a characteristic in the Alzheimer's brain, is now associated with the same lack of insulin that negatively affects cognition. All right? Where there is knowledge about underlying causes, there is the opportunity for prevention. Research that surfaces around problems with insulin and brain cell death offered health practitioners a way to identify full prevention tactics that help restore the brain cell function. Your brain on carbohydrates.
Most people know that a diet high in carbohydrates indicates a relationship to serious diseases like cancer, heart disease, and diabetes. What we haven't always known is the serious effect sugar has on our brain health. When you eat carbohydrates, which break down into sugar in the body, your blood sugar levels skyrocket. High blood sugar levels also create inflammation, further causing your brain's health to weaken. Over time, a diet high in sugar translates into the accelerated death of supple, healthy brain cells. Studies have shown that brain cells shrink and become tangled from high blood sugar levels over time. This means that your sugar intake could be drastically affecting long-term brain health, inherently increasing the likelihood of developing lesions in the brain, which are linked to the deadly disease process we call Alzheimer's. The good news is that the brain is very resilient. A handful of well-researched holistic prevention tools have been shown to restore damaged brain cells and return a dying brain to its fully functioning state.
Wow. How do I decrease my risk of type 3 diabetes? Coconut oil. I've been wanting to get this. Many think it an unusual treatment, but it's the leading preventative tool for cognitive health. It doesn't take years or even months. Coconut oil takes action on the brain just after 140
milliliter dose.
Medium chain triglycerides are the primary fat found in coconut oil, and they are powerful, rapidly helping to boost brain metabolism and thereby increase cognitive function. Recent insightful research has shown that patients experience significant neurological healing after 4 to 6 weeks of using the oil in their nutritional plans. Coconut oil is also a valuable source of fuel for the brain. When brain cells have undergone metabolic deterioration associated with insulin resistance, they can no longer accept glucose, the brain's main fuel source. However, coconut oil is rich in the medium chain fatty acids that break down into ketones in the liver and alternative fuel for the brain that is as efficient as glucose. Using coconut oil has been shown to control or even reverse the progression of what has been recently reported as type 3 diabetes. Try using extra virgin coconut oil in your cooking, baking, or your morning smoothies to receive exceptional cognitive benefits. Yeah! I'm going to do that. Huh? What do you think?
Yeah.
We should both do that. We don't want to be babbling idiots.
No.
Yeah. Yeah, all right. There's a phase two to this. It's 9 o'clock, but it's worth reading. We'll go on a little bit.
A maximized diet. Compelling reports have shown that the nutrition plan offered in individuals seeking type 2 diabetes prevention is one of the same plans offered to those looking to decrease the risk of Alzheimer's disease. This dietary prevention plan includes foods that are low in sugar and high in healthy fats, which create a rich, healing environment for the brain. Your brain will thrive when you load up on friendly fats and decrease your carbohydrate intake. Fats that are optimal for the promotion of plasticity in your brain include olive oil, avocado, salmon, and almonds. Even small increments of good fats can make lasting difference in your brain's health. So implement them into your diet today and every day. The best carbs. One day, Western culture has...
fruits and veggies.
...has consumed voluminous quantities of processed carbohydrates, so-called whole grains. As a result, healthy practitioners are finding strong links between these foods we eat and suboptimal brain health, which makes it imperative for you to adjust your carbohydrate intake. Fruits and vegetables that promote cell growth are less inflammatory and acidic and then are starchy carbs with the exception of a few higher sugar fruits. They are lower in sugar and are ideal for preventing type 3 diabetes. Maximize your dishes with blueberries, blackberries, raspberries, kale, spinach, avocados, and other dark-colored fruits and vegetables for peak cognitive functioning.
Beta-carotene and vitamin C. Of course, a diet low in sugar, plentiful in good fats, and rich in dark-colored vegetables is ideal for the health of your brain. While increasing your intake of antioxidants has also proven to be beneficial in nurturing and optimizing neural function. Research has shown that vitamin C and beta-carotene found in foods like lemons, grapefruits, kale, and bell peppers aid in the prevention of neurodegenerative diseases. Excessive free radical production can create a dangerous atmosphere in the brain, making it rancid. And antioxidants are a strong combatant against these brain-damaging agents. Increase your intake of antioxidants through fresh fruits and vegetables or organic health supplements. Chiropractic care. Chiropractic research has shown that over time, the body's resistance to outflow from the brain can cause normal pressure, hydrocephalus, and
toxic metabolic anemia, which in turn causes the brain to break down. This means that a decrease in the normal fluid functioning without an increase in brain volume causes the brain to stop functioning. Naturally, in the prevention of Alzheimer's disease and any other cognitive disorder, schedule regular chiropractic appointments and maintain a body system that is functioning at its highest potential. Well, we're right to the end of the show.
Knowledge is power. Recent research around neural deterioration and insulin resistance has been groundbreaking. The most notable and curious point is evidence that the disease could in fact be preventable. Alzheimer's disease may no longer be a murky, genetically defined illness if brain-healthy lifestyle choices are created and maintained.
So it's all in the food, folks. That's exactly what they're telling us.
Stay the hell away from sugar, carbs, and
processed, any kind of processed food.
Yeah.
Wheat.
Sure.
Grains.
Yeah.
I didn't know all grains were so bad for us.
Well, they are because the gluten is so bad.
Yeah.
There's so much of it in gluten. Okay. Well, anyway, folks, I want to thank you very much for joining us tonight and ask you to, what's today? Today's Tuesday?
Yep.
Tuesday, yeah.
And
you can join us again tomorrow night, right here. Same time, same place. And we'll have more great news for you, lads. I'm using
Excuse me. I hope we can get into our websites tomorrow. I don't
know.
It froze me out today. But I'm sorry about that, folks. And talk to you tomorrow night.
Yeah.
Have a good rest of the evening.
And good night, everyone.